especially those not their own, at greater risk of psychological or physical harm. Earlier I mentioned a woman whose mother used to beat her with a spatula. After these beatings, her mother would say things like, "See what you made me do? Now come here and hug me." This, unfortunately, isn't the first time I've heard of this kind of pathology. In response to my books and articles, grown children from all over the world have written to tell me how their mothers used a kitchen utensil, a broom, or an old belt on them for the slightest transgressions, and then expected the child to comfort their abuser. You don't have to be a clinician to realize how damaging this is. If children express feeling hurt or upset, the parent may dismiss them. "Oh, stop it, it wasn't that bad," or "toughen up, you'll get over it." If children ask for hugs or attention, this self-absorbed parent may say, "Not until you stop being this way," or "Can't you see I'm busy?" This response leaves the child with a Grand Canyon-sized void that the child never seems to overcome. This is how such a parent's emotional instability reverberates into the next generations. Children of these personalities grow up psychologically damaged. The life lessons they pick up make me sad just writing about them. Stifle your emotions, ignore your needs, expect to be hurt, never say no. Don't make waves, you don't matter, but above all, comfort me. They learn to be secretive, to hide their feelings, or they act out to get a reaction, or they learn to lie, experiment with drugs, or mindlessly seek out anyone who will pay them attention. They may become bullies, adopting the preemptive "hurt them before they hurt you" mindset they absorbed so well from their unstable parent. And they are forever on guard, like sentinels, having been taught from an early age to be both fearful and hyper-vigilant, never knowing what mood their parent will be in or how the parent will react. This is no way to grow up. Imagine how it feels to discover that children in other families are loved, while you are merely tolerated or tormented. It comes as no surprise, then, when the adult children of the emotionally unstable personality write to me saying they're torn between wishing their parent was dead and dreading it happening. Since then, they'd have to decide whether or not to attend the funeral and pretend they care when they don't. As one woman recently told me, "All I wanted was to be loved. How hard is that? You don't know what it is like not to be loved by a mother. It will be a relief when she dies." If you have children with a parent like this, you have a responsibility to try to provide safety and respite for them. Sadly, in my experience, most parents fail to act because they don't want to deal with the volcanic reaction of the emotionally unstable parent. This is a terrible disservice to an innocent, powerless child. If ending the relationship and gaining custody of the children isn't an option, everything possible should be done to set boundaries to protect the child and provide opportunities for relief. For example, facilitating anything the child loves to do, school activities, hobbies, extracurricular sports, reading, music, art, to keep the youngster away from the toxic parent. But I have to be honest here. Perhaps more honest than a therapist may be with you, the long-term prospects are dismal. Protect your child and get away, please, for their sake and yours. Encounters with the emotionally unstable personality. Often these personalities have a veneer that allows them to function in society, but not always. A lot of euphemisms are used to describe them. "My neighbor's very irritable. My cubicle mate is crazy. Her Highness is having a fit. He's prone to outbursts. There's too much drama here." I believe we should never sugarcoat what can hurt us. Through their behavior, these individuals confirm that they're emotionally unstable and toxic. Through their behavior, they cause others to react negatively and create needless interpersonal conflict. A telltale clue is how people in business will do almost anything to limit their communications and interactions with the emotionally unstable personality. Word soon gets out. People will say things like, "Is he on the team, project, committee, attending the event? Because if he is, I'm out." They'll avoid having to call, talk to, socialize with, work with, or even sit next to this toxic person, and will exclude him or her from meetings, events, and the information loop. In the film The Devil Wears Prada, a staffer describes Miranda Priestly, the terrifying editor of a top fashion magazine, played with chilling precision by Meryl Streep. "Miranda Priestly is impossible, always has been, always will be. Your job is not about pleasing her, it's about surviving her." It's a perfect description of life with an unstable boss, coach, manager, or leader. You work your fingers to the bone, but there's no appreciation. No one wants to break bad news or tell this person something can't be done. Sometimes these personalities have the capability to get the job done and things look good to the outside world. For example, to senior management, to a commanding officer, or to voters. But talk to those who work for or with them, and you'll hear stories of people being chewed out, of cruel things being said, of intentional divisiveness sown in the ranks. Maybe they get the job done, but at what cost? The losses in turnover, sick days, illnesses, insurance, and lawsuits are considerable. If you read the newspapers or biographies, you'll find accounts of many who stand out as having characteristics of the emotionally unstable personality. While it would be easy to make snap judgments about people based on media accounts of their behavior, this is something we should resist doing. First, we don't know the full story of how this person behaves, nor any extenuating circumstances of the situation. For example, Amy Winehouse, the singer-songwriter who tragically died of alcohol poisoning in 2011, appeared to have a number of the characteristics of the emotionally unstable personality. Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. The complete details are not available to most of us. So while we may read or see accounts that give us pause or put us on alert, generally, we need more information to fully understand if someone is an emotionally unstable or dangerous personality. Second, the principal methodology we discuss in this book is based on your direct observations, not on what you may read in the headlines. So while what we glean from news reports may give us pause, we need to be careful in our assessments. Personal turmoil, whether in politics, entertainment, or just next door, certainly gets our attention. But we can never know for sure if this is an emotionally unstable personality until we experience that personality directly. As with most of the dangerous personalities in this book, the public hardly notices the emotionally unstable personality until or unless the person does something outrageous, grotesque, or criminal. For the most part, emotionally unstable personalities do most of their damage privately, one-on-one, behind closed doors. Even if those doors are at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, otherwise known as the White House, most people are not aware that Mary Todd Lincoln, wife of President Abraham Lincoln, brought much turmoil into their relationship, the executive government, and the White House with her notable emotional instability. There are, of course, those the media seem to track with frequency, because they're in the entertainment industry. But for the most part, we endure the emotionally unstable personality in private. What I most often hear from those involved with an emotionally unstable personality is, "I suffered alone." Nevertheless, when I see, hear about, or meet someone who repeatedly violates social boundaries, someone who has a short fuse or is temperamental, someone who causes me or others to feel inferior or troubled, or someone who likes to argue and fight, my safety radar goes on alert. And I look for other clues that this individual might be an emotionally unstable personality, so I can take steps to protect myself and those I love. So should you. Your Dangerous Personalities Checklist. Warning Signs of the Emotionally Unstable Personality. As I noted in the introduction, I developed various behavior-based checklists during my career to help me assess individuals to see if they were dangerous personalities. This particular checklist will help you determine if someone has the features of the emotionally unstable personality and where that person falls on a continuum or spectrum, irritating and dramatic to caustic and mercurial to threatening or dangerous. This will help you decide more precisely how to deal with this person, determine his or her toxicity, and assess whether he or she may be a threat to you or others. This checklist, as well as the others in this book, was designed to be used in everyday life by you and me, people who are not trained mental health professionals or researchers. It is not a clinical diagnostic tool. Its purpose is to educate, inform, or validate what you have witnessed or experienced. Listen to each statement in the checklist carefully and check the statements that apply. Be honest. Think about what you have heard an individual say or seen him or her do, or what others have expressed to you. Obviously, the best evidence is what you yourself have observed and how you feel when you are around or interact with this person. Check only the statements that apply. Don't guess or include more than meet the criteria exactly. If in doubt, leave it out. Some items seem repetitive or appear to overlap. That is intentional, to capture nuances of behavior based on how people typically experience or describe these personalities. It is very important that you complete the entire checklist as designed to increase its reliability. Each complete checklist covers very subtle yet significant issues that you may never have thought about. Some items may help you remember events you'd forgotten. Please listen to each statement, even if you feel you've heard enough, or that the first few items don't seem to apply. Gender pronouns, he, she, etc., are used interchangeably in the statements. Any statement may be applicable to any gender. We'll evaluate scores when you're done, but for now, check off each item below that applies. 1. You are constantly on the defensive around this person. 2. Displays of intense anger and outbursts are disproportionate to the circumstances or the event. 3. Since knowing or entering into a relationship with this person, you have become less happy, less confident, or less sure of yourself. 4. Relationships are a roller coaster of highs and lows. 5. The person is unable to appreciate the consequences of his statements or behavior and how it may affect others, including family members or society. 6. Behaves in ways that at times are inappropriate or outrageous. 7. Seems to fall apart under stress with some frequency. 8. Arguments that should last a few minutes may go on for hours or days, with no effort to ameliorate or end them. 9. Seems to play role of victim or princess with regularity. 10. Hates being alone and constantly seeks companionship. 11. Has threatened suicide. 12. Frequently displays or expresses feelings of panic, anxiety, irritability, sadness, or anger. 13. Often feels or has expressed feeling emptiness, gets bored very easily, needs excitement. 14. Intense anger has been observed toward family members. 15. There are recurrent instances of fighting, arguing, or physical confrontations with others. 16. Verbal altercations seem to be a way of life for her. 17. You can't seem to relax, chill out, or stand down around this person. 18. This person has mentioned multiple times that someone or some group has it in for him and is conspiring against him. 19. Fellow workers describe her as trouble, difficult to work with, irritating, or impossible. 20. When you are around him, you feel emotionally and even physically drained. 21. After spending a few hours with her, you feel as if your world has been turned upside down. You may ask yourself, what just happened? 22. Those who are closest, for example, you, family, children, spouses, routinely have to check to see what is the current mood. 23. Frantically works at avoiding real or imagined abandonment by lovers or friends. 24. At times, this person's behavior seems theatrical or overdramatic for the circumstances. 25. Arguments are bitter and ugly, full of invective and cursing. 26. Is excessively demanding of others as it relates to favors, time, attention, or money. 27. Has thrown, torn, or broken objects out of anger or disapproval. 28. Has threatened suicide in order to avoid abandonment. 29. Rather than make amends or bring to closure, likes to wallow in argument and prolong acrimonious discourse. 30. Is described by others as unpredictable, unreliable, or unstable. 31. Attachments are often made too quickly and too intensely with someone new. 32. Likes to get tattoos in order to feel something. 33. Is known to seek or harbor grievances for a very long time. 34. Easily denigrates or criticizes others, causing humiliation or embarrassment. 35. Claims to forgive, but never does. Wrongs or injustices are remembered specifically for use in future arguments. 36. Has a short fuse, and frustration level is very low. 37. Seems incapable of consistent empathy, caring, or love. 38. It's not uncommon to hear people say, "Don't get upset," but when starting a conversation with this person. 39. There are indications that relationships are always stormy. 40. Marriage has been bitter and full of acrimony. 41. Seems to always be attracted to the wrong kind of person. Criminals, drug users, thrill seekers, or irresponsible individuals. 42. Doesn't seem to care if others are offended by his behavior. 43. Not happy being herself, wants to be someone else. 44. Takes part in risky behavior or thrill-seeking behavior that is criminal or puts others at risk. 45. Is very sensitive to what others say and think about him, tends to lash out when criticized. 46. Changes in plans are very upsetting and cause anxiety or irritability. 47. Known to have self-inflicted injury by cutting, scratching, biting, piercing, burning, or pulling out her own hair. 48. If ignored or not treated as special, gets upset or indignant. 49. Acts as though she wants to be the center of attention, doesn't want to feel left out. 50. Does not hesitate to lie or fabricate if it favors him. 51. You have felt reluctant to speak or take action out of fear of this person's reactions toward you or that they may hurt themselves. 52. Known to orchestrate sympathy to get attention. For example, feigns illness or malady. 53. Her suffering, illness, or injuries are always worse than everyone else's. 54. Places difficult demands on the time and attention of others. 55. Uses nurturing of others as a tool to garner attention and devotion from them. 56, has adopted children for the specific purpose of ensuring being taken care of when old. 57, does not understand or practice altruistic love. 58, you feel trapped by this person in some way. 59, it seems that this person's emotions are always so intense. 60, is known to have unstable and intense interpersonal relationships. 61, has complained of feeling inferior repeatedly. 62, everything that this person does for others seems to come at a price or with strings attached. 63, has been depressed or anxious for a long time or episodically. 64, changes loyalties quickly, leaving you or friends frustrated and bewildered. 65, seems to be very insecure and vigorously attempts to overcompensate. 66, has admitted experimenting with or using all kinds of drugs, both in quantity and variety. 67, has reported being emotionally out of control but can't explain why. 68, has threatened to hurt himself or commit suicide merely to manipulate others. 69, associating with this person lowers your self-esteem. 70, fears anyone getting too close or keeps people from getting too close. 71, has complained of a persistent vague illness or condition that affects her moods or energy levels. 72, has relationships that are intense but short-lived. 73, self-image is seemingly unstable, doesn't like who she is, how she looks, or where life is taking her. 74, has an overwhelming need to be loved, adored, and cared for exclusively. 75, claims to suffer from migraines, fibromyalgia, ulcers, colitis, irritable bowel syndrome, or frequent headaches. 76, grown children refuse to have anything to do with this person. 77, is very resourceful at blaming others when things go wrong. 78, turns any criticism into counter-criticism, even if it is illogical or false. 79, this person is in a constant power struggle with you or others. 80, is stubborn and argumentative, seems to always want the last word. 81, often exhibits poor planning, fails, for example, to bring food or water or even money for taking care of children, as if priorities are a last thought. 82, fluctuates between extremes of idealization, loving, and devaluation, hating of others. 83, seems to live for the moment. There is little planning for the future, financially or with regard to work. 84, doesn't seem to learn from previous relationships or from life experiences. 85, desires relationship with an ideal person who will be all caring, all giving, and omnipresent, at their total disposal, meaning an idealized person who doesn't exist. 86, when not fulfilled, becomes severely disappointed and devalues others. 87, is impulsive as it relates to one or more areas such as promiscuous sex, unrestrained spending, substance abuse, reckless driving, binge eating, gambling, excessive drinking, or risk-taking. 88, even after a short meeting, this person causes you or others to feel anxious, troubled, angry, or infuriated. 89, is constantly looking for excuses or cabals within organizations that are out to get her or keep her from being promoted or recognized. 90, intentionally seeks a relationship with someone who is married or already in a relationship. 91, dates have complained about feeling odd or that something is wrong or weird, even after a short date. 92. Psycho or nuts is a term you or others have used to describe this individual. 93. Seems capricious and temperamental without cause. 94. Has turned against loved ones dramatically without reasonable cause. 95. If in therapy, has turned against the therapist despite having previously praised the therapist. 96. Likes the fast, unencumbered life or engages in irresponsible behavior. 97. Has failed to comply with obligations, such as getting heating oil, paying bills, or paying taxes, despite having money. 98. Her own children seem to be an inconvenience to her, rather than a joy. 99. Uses humiliation as a form of punishment. 100. Has neglected children to hang out with friends, party, or go drinking. 101. Has a history of attracting too many men, and often the wrong kind of men. 102. Children complain about being ignored, ridiculed, or even abused by her at home. 103. Seems emotionally distant, even when trying to be close. 104. Has repeatedly accused you of being the cause of his problems or unhappiness. 105. Feels secure and happy with an entourage or a group, doesn't like to be alone. 106. There seems to always be tension. Almost everything is taken negatively in her life. 107. Seems temperamentally sensitive. 108. Has placed demands on you to take sides against someone. 109. Seems impervious to acts of kindness or generosity, even from people who care or have tried to help. 110. Seems hyper-alert to signs of abandonment or of losing someone. 111. Has reported anxiety or depression at various times in the past. 112. Has repeatedly stalked someone or has repeatedly harassed someone from his or her past. 113. Refuses to let scabs on the skin heal, picks at them even in public, pricks skin with sharp objects when stressed. 114. Is seemingly unable to control outbursts of anger or animosity. 115. Has been diagnosed as anorexic or suffering from bulimia nervosa. 116. Two or more non-clinical terms, such as horrible, bitchy, psycho, impossible, nutjob, crazy, or wacko, have been used to describe this person. 117. Has joined a cult or claims to have a guru, master, or coach, which she follows without question. 118. You feel you have to walk on eggshells around this person. 119. Is known to be afflicted with a personality disorder such as, but not limited to, histrionic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, or paranoid personality disorder. 120. Has physically hit a spouse or lover on more than one occasion when angry. 121. Has been diagnosed as being bipolar, manic depressive, or as having severe mood swings. 122. Has talked about or has actually physically retaliated against someone, let air out of tires, scratched a car door with a key, sent hate mail, etc. 123. Has gone to great effort or expense or traveled great distances to follow, observe, or harass someone. 124. At work has displayed intense anger toward fellow workers. 125. has vandalized or destroyed property of a former co-worker, friend, roommate, lover, or family member. Scoring. Count how many statements apply to this individual based on the criteria discussed at the beginning of this checklist. If you find that this individual has 15 to 35 of these features, this is a person who will occasionally take an emotional toll on others and may be difficult to live or work with. If the score is 36 to 65, this indicates that the individual has all the features of and behaves as an emotionally unstable personality. This person needs help and will cause turmoil in the life of anyone close to him or her. If the score is above 65, this person has a preponderance of the major features of an emotionally unstable personality, and is an emotional, psychological, financial, or physical danger to himself or herself, or to others. Immediate actions. If you're involved with an emotionally unstable personality, realize that these individuals need help from professionals who know how to deal with this kind of complex and conflicted personality. The process can be lengthy, but they can be helped by very intense therapy, if they're willing to be helped and with great effort on their part. You can try to reach out to them, but you may find yourself being attacked for your efforts. If being with this kind of person has caused you to be irritable, upset, angry, or depressed, or if they victimized you through their behavior, you may need professional assistance yourself. These individuals can be so toxic that they can traumatize without being physical. Set strict boundaries about what you will permit. While this may trigger resistance at first, it may establish some stability, if only for a while. If they insist on violating boundaries, or if they further traumatize you, then you have confirmation that they are seriously troubled and that you need to distance yourself. No one expects you to be mistreated or victimized, even by the emotionally unstable. Having said that, if you decide to continue to associate with this person, don't be surprised if the behaviors continue, creating turmoil in your life. If the person in question is considering, talking about, or threatening to harm himself, call 911 or police, fire department, or ambulance without hesitation, as these are issues best handled by professionals. If you have children, remember that they are helpless against this personality and need your protection. Take steps to protect yourself and any loved ones. You have a moral obligation to spare children the wrath of these individuals. For additional strategies, see Chapter 6, Self-Defense Against Dangerous Personalities. Chapter 3. Trust no one and you'll never get hurt. The Paranoid Personality. In the 1999 movie American Beauty, actor Chris Cooper brilliantly plays the part of the reclusive neighbor Colonel Frank Fitz, a retired U.S. Marine. Just from the nonverbals, we can tell something's wrong in that family. Fitz's wife is almost robot-like, afraid to speak. When the doorbell rings, everyone freezes. Fitz reacts, as he has always done. Rather than go to the door, he interrogates his wife and son about who's there. Fitz fears strangers and inquisitive neighbors, locking everything up in the house. To him, the world is falling apart, and he's one of the few who recognizes that. Fortunately, he has all the answers for what to do about it. He bashes gays, foreigners, blacks, even his own imperfect son. He mistrusts his family, constantly questioning their loyalty. There's no laughter or romance in the Fitz household. It's been years since friends came over. Everything must be done his way. Everyone moves slowly, methodically, avoiding anything that could rouse his suspicions or incite his ire. Inflexible, irritable, and highly moralistic, Fitz has made life miserable for anyone who comes in contact with him, especially his family. Fitz is a paranoid personality. No one's really like that, you say. You'd be wrong. There are millions of people like this to one degree or another. One of them was my neighbor. Mr. P., my neighbor where I grew up in the suburbs of Miami, rarely came out of the house. When he did, it was to shout at the kids who were playing in the neighborhood. He was retired, and he sat by the window keeping an eye on anyone who passed by. His wife had no friends and rarely went out. We said hi to her once, and he yelled at her for waving at us. He poisoned several animals that had strayed onto his property and bragged about it to us as a warning. I never saw Mr. P. smile or laugh. There was no joy in him. Once when a salesman came to our house with two suitcases full of fabric samples for curtains, Mr. P. called the police. I'm not sure what he thought, but I do know my mother had to leave work to deal with that inconvenience, and many more over the years. The kids in the neighborhood just thought he was weird. We thought it was odd that his wife wasn't allowed to talk to the neighbor moms. Some might say he was eccentric. What society doesn't teach us is that this individual is a paranoid personality. Had we known, we might have given him the space he craved and avoided the repeated humiliations my parents endured, trying to befriend him, only to be snarled at. Paranoid personalities are consumed by irrational mistrust and fear. Their suspicions know no bounds. Their rigid thinking is impervious to reason and makes them judgmental, biased, and uptight. They see only the cloud around the silver lining. Do something nice for them and they'll suspect ulterior motives. Altruists, to them, are opportunists with hidden agendas. All of us have an inner warning system that alerts us to danger, but with a paranoid personality, it's as if this system is stuck in overdrive, sounding alarms about you, me, neighbors, co-workers, ethnic groups, foreigners, the government, and on. Their skewed perspective dominates their life and can dominate anyone involved with them. When I lecture, I often ask for a show of hands from those who know someone like this. At first, just a few hands go up. But as I list the key traits, easily insulted, argumentative, jealous, holds grudges, questions motives, challenges the rules, fears, dislikes, or hates those who are different, I see the proverbial light bulbs going on as more and more hands rise. Sometimes people chuckle or roll their eyes as they recognize someone at work everyone has learned to avoid, or they close their eyes with the heavy look of one who has been badly hurt. Countless times during my years in law enforcement, we dealt with the damage these individuals inflict. Yet even we tended not to describe or understand them properly. That kind of failure can have deadly consequences. Jerry Kane and his son Joseph Kane of Little Rock, Arkansas were paranoid personalities, deeply suspicious of government officials and the police, believing that the law didn't apply to them. So when Officer Bill Evans and Sergeant Brandon Poddart pulled them over for a minor traffic violation, there was no talking. The Canes opened up with automatic weapons, killing both officers. This event was captured on the police dashboard camera and can still be seen on YouTube. If those officers had known that they weren't dealing with people who were just odd or eccentric, but rather with paranoid personalities who were virulently anti-government and anti-law enforcement, perhaps they'd be alive today. Look around and you will see these personalities. The driver who thinks you cut him off intentionally, so he tailgates you with horn blinking, headlights flashing, rude gestures, and cursing. He may even follow you all the way home. The man who thinks everyone's hitting on his wife or girlfriend, so at parties he sticks his nose into every conversation she has, especially with men, and makes sure those men don't loiter very long. The date from hell who considers you merely an audience for his Mr. Know-It-All act, argues with everything you say, or puts your ideas down. Not surprisingly, you discover he has no friends. The relative who's habitually trying to convince you of some pseudo-science remedy, or has found yet another guru who sees the world just as he does. The fellow employee who frequently files grievances and then questions why others got promotions or bonuses and he didn't. The complainer who shows up at government offices almost weekly to rant about issues or threaten to file a lawsuit. The anonymous author of an acrid online attack, accusing you of having a hidden agenda and knowing what you really meant. The reclusive neighbor who insists on telling you about the New World Order or conspiracies or secret organizations that control the federal government. The former employee or ex-boyfriend who, angry about how he's been treated, shows up at the office unannounced and armed. The brilliant scientist no one listens to, so he moves to a smelly cabin in Montana where he can warn us of the threat of technology by sending bombs, 16 in all, through the mail that killed 3 and injured 23. Unabomber Theodore John Ted Kaczynski, Ph.D. These are more than cranky people. They're driven by irrational fear and distrust. They're thin-skinned and hyper-reactive. And when crossed, rejected, or embarrassed, they may lash out and can be extremely dangerous. When coupled with narcissism, the paranoid personality drives violence on every level, from criminals to cult leaders to dictators who live by their own rules, vilify others, and annihilate anything that gets in their way. All that's needed is some unpredictable triggering event, and you end up with a Christopher Dorner, a former Los Angeles police officer who was hypersensitive, feeling slighted and incapable of reconciling his fears. So in 2013, he went after his former employers, killing 2 and leading officers into a standoff that ended with a shootout. Despite the danger they pose, these individuals are some of the least studied and understood. They're difficult to treat, in part because they don't think there's anything wrong with them, and they question the intentions of anyone trying to help. Too often they're at the mercy of their pathology, and so are we. The Way of the Paranoid Personality. Every FBI special agent who works complaint duty, as I did, will tell you that FBI reception rooms and phone lines are full of these personalities. They come in or call to carp about threats, enemies, conspiracies, cabals, or failures of the government to respond to their requests. I remember how sometimes their spouses sat quietly, faces furrowed from the agony of living with this person as the diatribe went on. Others wanted us to mediate because their mate, usually the husband, had spent a fortune on weapons, emergency shelters, 2-year supplies of food, and water purification systems. The FBI complaint desk was their last resort, after family members had given up. And of course, there was no money to visit a psychologist. Because I hadn't been clued into this pathology during training, I wasted precious hours attempting to use logic to persuade or convince these individuals of their errors, hours I could have spent solving crimes. In time, I learned to simply listen, not to set the record straight or try to present contrary evidence. All the paranoid personality wants is validation of his or her beliefs, and that requires one thing, a pliant audience. Movies and television often portray the paranoid personality as a wild-eyed, crazed individual, similar to the Jack Torrance character played by Jack Nicholson in the 1980s psychological horror film The Shining. But that's Hollywood. The reality is much different, much more nuanced. Some paranoid individuals are quiet and reserved, almost shy, yet they view the world with unyielding suspicion. Others are dramatic, vociferous, even combative. They often turn up the heat in conversations because they enjoy arguing. These individuals may show up at demonstrations and make it a point to not just argue but to be vitriolic, even physical, pushing others, blocking cars, damaging property. They skate very close to being unstable. All it takes is a trigger. Some are mental lightweights, while others have high IQs and achievements to their name. Ted Kaczynski had a very high IQ and a real knack for making bombs and hiding their origin. Howard Hughes was smart and rich, but very paranoid. So much so that he cocooned himself in hotel rooms during the last 10 years of his life, allowing no outsiders to see him. He died isolated from the world in a Las Vegas hotel room in 1976. Jimmy Lee Dykes won medals for his U.S. Navy service, but over the years repeatedly frightened his neighbors in Midland City, Alabama, with his eccentric and menacing behaviors. For example, threatening to shoot trespassers, making nocturnal armed tours of his property. Neighbors reluctantly tolerated this paranoid personality, but it all unraveled on January 29, 2013. On that day, shortly before he was slated to appear in court on a charge that he had menaced his neighbors yet again, Dykes boarded a school bus, killed the bus driver, and took a 5-year-old child hostage. The child was held captive in an underground bunker for 6 days before an FBI SWAT team rescued the boy, killing Dykes in the process. What drove the behavior of Kaczynski and Dykes? Simply this: irrational fear, the essence of the paranoid personality. At home or at work, there is always something for this personality to be suspicious about. Perhaps it's a neighbor, the neighbor's children, the planes that fly overhead, or the electric lines that sit close to the house. They seek space, isolation, and distance to calm their fears. Sadly, that can't be done because the paranoia comes from within them. Some isolate themselves at a school, at work, in a city, or even within a family. They become the loners. Some take it a step further and live in the wilderness. The desert Southwest, Idaho, Montana, and Alaska are favorite choices, to get away, avoid others, or prep for some apocalyptic event. They may find refuge in organizations that believe as they do, joining a group or a cult where they don't have to convince others of their fears or eccentric beliefs. Then there are those who are truly eccentric. They may dress oddly, military camouflage fatigues, carry a large knife, or dress to intimidate or to offend, such as when they wear the Nazi swastika. Naturally, others notice and talk about their strangeness. This, of course, fuels their paranoia that they're being talked about. The paranoia of some drives them into the camps of those who hate. They listen to it on the radio, attend rallies, and wear the emblems, signs, clothes, and tattoos of hatred. These are the ones who seek like-minded true believers, as Eric Hoffer warned us in his landmark book on mass movements and totalitarian governments. They join the KKK, the skinheads, Aryan nations, and any other extremist group that seeks to hate and do away with others because passionate hatred and fear give purpose and meaning to an otherwise unfulfilled life. Or they hook up with just one other like-minded paranoid personality for support in doing harm. This is what happened with the 2013 Boston Marathon bombers, the Tsarnaev brothers. Similarly, Timothy McVeigh joined forces with Terry Nichols, a fellow like-minded personality, to blow up the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma. And when they cannot find anyone with whom to commiserate, they act alone, like Anders Behring Breivik, the right-wing extremist who feared the influx of minorities in Norway, so he went out and massacred 77 souls, mostly children, in Norway in 2011. The paranoid personality spectrum, as you can see, is broad and ranges from irritating and obnoxious to extremely flammable and dangerous. But to one degree or another, these people share defining characteristics. Hyper-suspicious, fearful, secretive. These personalities' irrational suspicion drives them to constantly monitor the words and actions of others to gauge evil or malicious intent. Even inadvertent social slights may be viewed as suspect. They tend to be secretive and not reveal much about themselves. They may lie to protect their beliefs, whereabouts, or true intentions. Even at home, they may lock things away from their spouses or fellow family members. It's not unusual for them to have a locker, or sometimes a room no one else can enter. As you can see, this is where normal maintenance of privacy and security crosses over into the paranoid realm, the realm where even family members can't be trusted. It's impossible to catalog all the things the paranoid personality may fear. It could be blacks, Catholics, Jews, Mormons, Baptists, Mexicans, Muslims, Africans, non-English speakers, electrical grids, cell phone towers, the food supply, fluoridation of water, the neighbors, planes flying overhead, foreign accents, abortion clinics, animal research, pharmaceutical companies, the New World Order, anyone wearing a blue beret, Europeans, microphones, the government, the IRS, non-whites, technology, and on and on and on. Oh, and let's not forget the cubicle mate, the boss, the manager, the HR department, the computer system, the insurance company, the email system at work, or perhaps you. Each one of these individuals has his or her own particular fear, gripe, or insecurity. Eventually, if you associate or interact with the person long enough, these will be revealed to you. If not in words, then through the person's paranoid, eccentric, or dangerous behavior. Some are so mistrusting that they keep lists of the comings and goings of co-workers, neighbors, family members, strangers, or anyone who passes by. Ted Kaczynski did just that from his remote cabin in Montana. President Richard Nixon, who had many of the features of the paranoid personality, kept an enemies list, and repeatedly stated to others that he just could not confide in anyone. Opinionated, argumentative, prone to hate. Adaptability is a hallmark of a healthy human being. We can embrace new ideas and change in response to circumstances. While we hold steadfast to certain beliefs, for example, religious or political views, we recognize that others feel differently. Not so for paranoid personalities. They think their hypersensitivity is a form of superior insight, so there's no room for debate with them. Logical or even empirical proof to them is meaningless. Try to reason with them and you may be seen as a conspirator working against them, or worse, as an enemy. Paranoid personalities select and distort facts and history, stringing together disparate events and ideas to fit their views and justify their actions. For example, exterminating doctors who perform abortions. When Paul Jennings Hill assassinated John Britton, M.D., and his friend James Barrett in 1994, as Britton walked into a women's abortion clinic in Pensacola, Florida, in Hill's paranoid mind, his killing of the doctor and his friend, who was acting as his bodyguard, was justified to save unborn babies. Such is the mind of the paranoid personality, skewed, rigid, moralistic or unyielding, where murder is justified to save the unborn. This personality tends to know a lot about very little, fixating on a narrow idea, a passage of the Bible, or a legal, social, or political issue that may be of little or no consequence to most of us. Timothy McVeigh focused on the militarization of police SWAT teams in the 1990s. He didn't like their military-style tactics, targeting reclusive Randy Weaver and his family at Ruby Ridge in northern Idaho in 1992. For his beliefs, and for his hatred of the federal government in general, he blew up the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma, killing 168 innocents, including children. Paranoid personalities are not sticklers for logic or empirical evidence. They will cite dubious or obscure examples from history, esoteric works, unknown authors, or even law dictionaries to support their arguments. Combine rigid thinking, a fixed ideology, and selective memory with irrational fear, and you have the toxic broth of hate. Not the dislike you or I might feel, but an uncompromising, dehumanizing hate. Add pathological narcissism to the mix, and you have people willing and able to act on their hatred with horrific cruelty, walking into classrooms and calmly gunning down students as they scream and cower. This is exactly what happened at Columbine High School, 1999, thanks to two paranoid teenagers, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, who narcissistically saw themselves as special and entitled to take the lives of others. For many of these paranoid personalities, violence becomes the solution, because nothing else will achieve their out-of-bounds aims, or do so fast enough for them. So you get magical thinking that goes something like this. If I kill enough scientists, I'll stop the advance of technology. Unabomber Ted Kaczynski, who mailed 16 bombs, killing 3 and wounding 23. If I blow up a building, I'll stop the FBI and do away with SWAT teams. Timothy McVeigh, bomber of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, killing 168 women and children and injuring hundreds. If I set off a bomb at the Atlanta Olympics, then abortions in America will cease to be performed. Eric Rudolph, Olympic Park Bomber, 1996, Atlanta. If I kill enough Americans, the United States will leave the Middle East. Osama bin Laden, mastermind of the 9/11 attack on the United States that killed nearly 3,000. If I kill enough Norwegian children, then surely the government will recognize my warnings about the threat of Muslims and foreigners migrating to Norway. Anders Behring Breivik killed 77, mostly children, in Norway. It's clear to everyone but them that their actions will not have the effect they desire, and that in fact their thinking is not just magical but pathological. Violence won't fix what they crave to change, but such is the thought process of the paranoid personality at the more volatile end of the spectrum. Wound collector, grudge holder. The paranoid personality, much like the emotionally unstable personality, is a perennial wound collector, only more so. Any innocent mistake or perceived wrong, no matter how unintentional, becomes a black mark on your character and an indicator of your disloyalty. No transgression, including those you didn't do, will be forgotten or forgiven. Once you're the enemy, the paranoid person will feel justified in holding grudges or taking action against you. Be it avoiding you, backstabbing you, plotting against you, sabotaging or destroying things that belong to you, or in some cases, killing you. History is full of paranoid wound collectors. Osama bin Laden used events from the Crusades in the 11th century to justify the killing of Americans in 2001. Ted Kaczynski collected wounds and grievances from the time of the Industrial Revolution in the 18th century. While Timothy McVeigh's dissatisfaction with the federal government and wound collecting began just a few years prior to his bombing of an Oklahoma City federal building during the events at Ruby Ridge, 1992, and the siege of the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, 1993. For paranoid personalities, wound collecting is a necessity. They use it to justify their actions, and there's no statute of limitations on how far back they'll reach to collect those wounds, nor how wide a net they will cast. This personality has fantastic recall of adversarial situations, historical wrongs, and social slights. These collected wounds feed their paranoia and justify their hatred and behavior. Hitler's Mein Kampf, if you can bear to read it, is one long, rambling collection of historical wounds focusing on the Jews going back 2,000 years to the time of Christ. Words that describe the paranoid personality. Here are the uncensored words victims use to describe the paranoid personality. Adversarial, alarmist, alone, aloof, angry, apocalyptical, apprehensive, armed, aroused, assertive, barricaded, biased, bigoted, bluffer, boastful, cagey, calculating, callous, cantankerous, careful, cautious, circumspect, cold, combative, complainer, confused, confusing, contemptuous, contentious, contrarian, control freak, controlling, cracked, crackpot, crank, crazy, creepy, critical, cruel, crusty, daft, defensive, delusional, demanding, demented, deranged, difficult, disbeliever, distrustful, disturbed, doubtful, draining, dry, eccentric, envious, erratic, evasive, extremist, fanatic, fearful, fixated, Flake, fruitcake. Fussy, grandiose, guarded, gullible, hard-headed. Hater, hates. Haughty, hidden, hiding. High-strung, hostile, hubris, hypercritical, hypersensitive, impossible, impressionable, incredulous, inflexible, inhospitable, injured, insular, intolerant, irascible, irrational, irritable, isolated.